Hello and welcome to all our listeners. This one focuses primarily on surrogates and their partners and how their relationship has been affected by their decision to go into a surrogacy journey. As usual with these podcasts, we are going to be focusing on a series of questions, and then we set out to debunk some of the social media comments and opinions that have been gathered over the past few months and years. Joining me today, we have Max and her partner, Kieran. And in a bit of an unusual turn of events for this podcast, we also have Renna and her partner, me, who will be answering your questions, or answering the questions, should I say. So we'll dive in with the first couple, Max and Kieran. Would you like to just introduce yourselves and just tell us a bit about yourselves, please?
Yeah, so I am Max. I'm currently 40 weeks pregnant, and I decided to become a surrogate 2 years ago when I first applied to SUK. Kieran and me have been together for just on a year now.
Yeah, I'm Kieran. I'm Max's partner, and Max was already in a team when we met.
Yeah.
So I was sort of thrown in the deep end, not knowing anything about surrogacy. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Learning curve.
Yeah, but it's been good.
Nicely done. Thank you very much, you two. We'll come over to Renna. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about yourself and me? Be kind, please.
So I'm Renna. I am a mum of three children. And we joined Surrogacy UK in 2018. So we've been part of the organisation now for 5 years. We met a couple at our very first conference, and it was a bit of a roller coaster. And we started off with host surrogacy and then moved to straight surrogacy, and their daughter was born in 2020. So none of us anticipated or imagined a lockdown birth, but that's exactly what we got. And she's now turned three. And then we met our second team in 2021, and I gave birth to their son 5.5 months ago. So that's our kind of journey into surrogacy.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
Thank you, Renna. So Max and Kieran, we'll come over to you with our first question, which just asks if you can both walk us through the journey that led you to the decision of surrogacy. Now, obviously, I appreciate, Kieran, this is having been thrown in at the deep end, this is probably not as relevant a question to you. So Max, could you walk us through the journey that led you to that decision, please?
Yeah, I mean, for me, there was always something missing and I couldn't quite put my finger on what. Eventually in 2019, after watching an episode of a show which referred to surrogacy, it got my brain ticking and I ended up joining the SUK Facebook group and looking into it. At the time, I was with my son's father, who was born in 2018, and he was very against the idea. So it was kind of, I was on the Facebook group and put it on the back burner. And then when we separated in 2021, it was the first thing that I did was put in my application to be a surrogate and start my journey. I knew as soon as my son was born that I didn't want any more children. So it was an easy decision for me that I was 25 when I joined. I was young, I was in prime fertility, and I thought, why not share that and give somebody a gift?
Thanks, Max. Renna, would you like to walk us through what led you into surrogacy?
Yeah, so I think we had quite an easy journey into parenthood. We had a loss for our first pregnancy, which gave us a teeny tiny glimmer into what it might be like to struggle. And then we had our three children really quite easily. And my sister was really, really struggling. She couldn't get pregnant. She was having loads of losses. And the thought crossed my mind, oh, maybe it's something I could do to help her. And we had that conversation. And then she got pregnant and she's got two little boys now, which is fantastic. But that feeling never left me. And I didn't know anything about surrogacy, but I did know something about egg donation. So I applied to become an egg donor with an organisation, and the couple that I donated to now have three daughters. And it was wonderful. And I'll be forever proud of that. However, there was this part of me that thought, oh, I wish I'd have known them. And the way that fate works out, there was a girl that read my review of egg donation and she asked me about it. We became friends. She then joined SUK and she said to me, Renna, did you know that you can do egg donation within surrogacy that's known? So I said, yes. and I joined. And then we haven't, you know, it just, it evolved quite organically, really, into surrogacy.
So, Kieran, we're going to come to you. And how did you feel when the idea of surrogacy was first introduced to you? Because obviously, I guess, as you said, it was kind of a, was it, would you describe it as a shock or a surprise? Or was it just sort of something that Max worked into conversation on your first date? How did that work out?
So me and Max have known each other since we were four. We went to infant and primary school together. So we had each other on social media. So I saw sort of little bits, and Max started a blog. So I saw a couple of the blogs and stuff. So I knew minimal going into the first date about it. And then I think within about a 10-minute conversation on our first date, I was like, this is amazing. I'm all in. I just think she's amazing. So it was really quite easy for me to get my head around, I think. I think just seeing how passionate Max was about it, and it was happening regardless. So it wasn't, if it was something that I was against, it wouldn't have been something that I could have changed anyway. But I just thought it was just an amazing thing to do. And then it just evolved from there. I learned so much in the first couple of months, I think.
Yeah.
I think every time I had a question, I was like, oh, I need to know about this. So, it was really easy for me because Max was so passionate about it.
So you said about her writing blog posts and that kind of thing. So I guess it was kind of a soft easing in sort of intro.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about surrogacy really, other than what I'd seen on the couple of blog posts that I'd seen on Facebook. But like Max was really good. I asked every question under the sun, I think. And she, yeah, just really good. And once I felt like I knew enough, I was like, this is amazing. Let's do it.
I think learning more is always key, isn't it? You know, if you there's always this fear of the unknown. And if there is that fear, then the best thing to do is just to educate yourself as best you can or as thorough as you can on whatever's worrying you. I mean, from my point of view, when we first attended our information day with Surrogacy UK, I very much went to that under the impression that we were just going to be egg donors. You know, Renna had already donated her eggs anonymously, as she mentioned. So I arrived at this thing and I, you know, actively, you know, like queuing up for lunch and when we took a break in the day, and I just kept saying to everybody, oh yeah, I'm here with my wife. She's an egg donor. And so that was very much my take on it. When we attended this information day, what I didn't realize is that Renna's mindset was probably about 3 months ahead of mine. She'd already actively made the decision to be a surrogate. She just hadn't voiced that to me at that point. And so, but you know, just some of the partners that I met at the information day, they knew already. They knew, you know, what a natural transition this was from egg donation into surrogacy, because everybody I spoke to, as soon as I said, oh, my wife's an egg donor, the reaction was kind of, yeah, for now. And so, you know, to say that we were both on the same page, we really weren't. Like I say, we were, so when we had the conversation and Renna said to me, you know, I think I really would like to be a surrogate, I probably had, and I'll elaborate on this in a minute, but I probably had the same kind of concerns and fears that some of our family members had when they found out about it. But like you, Kieran, I was just like, well, I just need to go and learn as much as I can about this, because I want to be the supportive husband. I don't want to just flat out say no, or, you know, in a very old fashioned way, try and forbid her from doing this. You know, that just wasn't me. So we kind of collectively decided to go to the conference and just attend as many, you know, my intention was to attend as many seminars as possible and just learn as much as I possibly could, and then make the educated decision off of that. You know, if I was going to say no, I wanted to say, you know, I'm not on board because X, Y, Z that I've learned from this conference. But we attended the conference, and at the end of it, we met so many fantastic people that couldn't have a family in the traditional sense. And I just said to Renna at the end of the conference, I said, we have to do this, don't we? We just have to. So for you guys, specifically for you, Kieran, were there any initial concerns or reservations you had when you read those blog posts and about surrogacy? You know, I mean, obviously you said about educating yourself. Were there any other ways that you addressed any concerns if you had them?
We had lots of good conversations, didn't we?
A lot, yeah.
Early on, just before you got pregnant and just after, I think my concerns were always looking towards the end of the pregnancy and the birth. I think I'm in a position where I don't have children of my own, so I've never been involved in a birth. I think it really freaked me out for a long time. It was something that I really struggled with. I remember being at a conference and being in a seminar, and they were talking about the birth, and it just was so overwhelming. I think I had a mini panic attack, to be honest. Almost got up and left the room, didn't I? But yeah. I stuck it out because I thought, I need to know this stuff. So sort of stuck it out, stayed in there, and then as it was the seminar was over, I just basically
ran.
Pretty much just run outside and was like, I just need 10 minutes because this is just a lot. And I think they're still there a little bit, but we talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
Max is really good at sort of explaining stuff to me and the process and that. And then I feel a lot better about it now. Still worried about it, especially that the pregnancy is going on longer than we anticipated. And we're now having conversations about induction and that sort of stuff. But I feel a lot more confident in my ability to support her than I did 6 months ago.
And do you feel that in any way that kind of concern is it amplified, would you say, by the fact that this isn't your pregnancy? You know, this isn't going to be your child at the end of the labour?
Maybe, yeah, possibly. I think just the idea of giving birth freaks me out anyway.
You're quite squeamish.
Yeah, I'm very squeamish. And sort of throughout my life, I haven't had a lot of interaction with hospitals and stuff. So I don't know a lot of the clinical side, and sort of being in that environment just puts me on edge a little bit. But Max has been really, really good at alleviating my fears and concerns, and we've spoken a lot about it. And like I say, I'm in a much better place, I think, with it now than I was.
So it's very much a different animal to what we're experiencing, or what we've experienced, because, as you say, because you've not been party to a labour before.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, certainly with our first sorrow baby, I'd already been through it three times. You know, I thought I knew what to expect. And I say I thought I knew because obviously nobody could foresee lockdown and the fact that
we
ended up giving birth in our dining room in an inflated birth pool. So my concerns weren't born out of how I was going to handle the labours, because like I say, I considered myself to be reasonably old hat at it by the time we went into the surrogacy world. My concerns were generally around the pregnancy itself. You know, we've since learned that, you know, when you speak to people, it can be a different ball game when there are other genetics involved. You know, just because our pregnancies ran smoothly, it was because it was 50% of my DNA and 50% of Renna's DNA. But you put other people's embryos into the mix,
and yes,
it changed things, can't it? And I remember with our first surrogacy pregnancy, Renna was really quite poorly with morning sickness. Well, not exactly morning sickness, all day sickness, wasn't it?
24/7
sickness.
Yeah, you had that as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Which we'd never experienced.
No.
So, you know, it was kind of, for me, it was a bit like, what is happening? You know, we didn't have this the first time around. And yeah. So my concerns or reservations weren't initially, I guess they weren't really there at the start of it. You know, I just, as I say, I've been to the information days, I've been to the conference. I didn't really have that many concerns in terms of Renna's health. But then once the sickness started, you know, I suddenly found myself solo parenting three children and also having a care for my wife who was, you know, bedridden with sickness. And so it's just like, oh, this has the potential to be a bit of a roller coaster, really.
Yeah.
So, my concerns or reservations, they kind of started being just I guess what you were describing, Kieran, with not having had much experience around a hospital and certainly having no experience around a labor. You just don't know what to expect, which for me was just around how surrogacy worked, logistically speaking. But then that quickly evolved into, oh, wow, this is affecting my wife's health more drastically than our pregnancies did. So is this going to be something completely different, you know, completely different experience?
And the same with Robin as well, wasn't it?
You
know, how, you know, I'd kind of said to everybody, oh, well, I've had four pregnancies, including first sorrow baby, where it was, apart from the sickness, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay in pregnancy. I don't really tend to have a lot of complications. And then with Robin, at 30 weeks, I was in hospital with, you know, really bad, you know, it was low blood pressure, high resting heart rate. And, you know, and that was a really scary time for you and for the whole team.
Yeah. You know, we kind of went into our second surrogacy journey thinking, oh, she might be quite poorly with this again in the first few weeks. But you kind of...
I was okay. I felt sick, but I wasn't
You
as
kind
bad.
Of breezed through it by comparison, didn't you? Yeah. And so we then thought we were out of the woods. And then, as you say, this kicked in at 30 weeks. And again, it was just like, oh, Jesus, really? We're going through this again? So for both of you, I guess, could you describe some of the emotional and physical challenges you've faced as a couple? You know, Kieran's obviously mentioned his concerns and any reservations he had, but as a couple, obviously having only been together for a year or just over a year, have there been any emotional and physical challenges you've faced during the surrogacy process in the 40 weeks? don't want to put too much of a fine point on that for you, Max. I know you've had enough now.
I think, like you've just said, one of the biggest shocks that came to me and that affected us as a couple was how sick I was. Because with my son's pregnancy, I just breezed through it. Like, I didn't have a sickness once. I didn't have any symptoms. I literally walked through it. I was one of those really, really lucky people that most pregnant women hate that just go through it and have no issues besides a bit of a rubbish birth. And then to be so sick, I lost nearly 2 stone at the beginning. I was bedridden most days. I had 4 weeks off work. And then it was just from there, it was just like pregnancy symptom bingo.
It was if you'd had a bingo card, we would have won by about 6 months in. It was crazy.
And that was hard to try and get through.
It's been really rough on you and your body. It's been really hard. But I think the one thing that we've been really lucky is we've got through it together.
Yeah.
With no arguments,
we've never argued.
No, like, oh, I'm so fed up, I don't even want to do this or don't want to do that. Like, you were really ill, but you were still yourself.
Yeah, we've never taken it out on each other.
No, when we could have done it, points, it has been really fun. Obviously, a lot rougher for you, but it has been a really difficult pregnancy.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look back to the beginning, and we've been together for 8 weeks when I did transfer. Eight weeks. We were put on sex ban, essentially. I mean, as a new couple, you've been together 8 weeks and you're told that's it. You're not allowed to go near each other for the next 6 weeks. And it's like, oh, God, even the little things like that, you don't even consider. And then you go into it and you're like, oh, that's a bit of a bummer. Even things like that, are just like, you forget about.
Yeah.
The little things that we've had to sacrifice during our relationship.
You have been the sickness up to 16 weeks. Horrific. And this is my first experience of pregnancy.
It's taken us both by surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, emotionally, there's been a lot of tears.
There's been a lot of tears.
From both of us. So we don't argue, we just cry.
Yeah.
But it's been, we've leaned on each other rather than fought against each other, which has been massive.
Really good.
From a practical point of view, Kieran, you sound like me. It's just you just rather just crack on with it and not.
Yeah.
Don't think we really argued throughout, any of our pregnancies, but certainly not the surrogacy ones, did we?
No.
You know, I just didn't see the point in it because it's not going to solve anything.
No.
So we could either fight with each other and argue and not talk to each other for a day, or I can hold her hair back and rub her back while she's being sick. It's like there's no point in fighting about it.
And I think do you think it's fair to say that, because obviously it was slightly different for you guys because Max had already made this decision prior to you meeting and getting together, but certainly for us, because you go into it as a mutual decision, there really isn't any foundation for the arguments. It can't be like, oh, you've done this, or this was your choice. That to me would be almost like the logical starting point for any argument would be that if you started it not in the same place. Is that sort of fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, and I think when you think about, I mean, I know that you've got some questions later on, but I think what helps you and what you support each other through those ups and downs is you keep that communication going. And I think because it was a decision we made together, obviously with Max and Kieran, Kieran was going into a relationship knowing that this was something Max was going to do. Yeah. I think you absolutely do both need to be on the same page when you're going into surrogacy, because Max and Kieran have absolutely had their ups and downs in this pregnancy with the different complications that Max has had, but also we've had really tough times as well, and stuff that, you know, would test your relationship. And you know, we've been together 20 years now, and even things that happened to us during the surrogacy really tested our relationship and what we could handle together as a couple. But then on the flip side of that, I don't know whether you two would agree, but I also think surrogacy has made us even closer, if that's possible, because I think you're doing this together, you're a team. Mm-hmm. And so when we had Beatrix and Robin as well, I remember you saying, look what we've done, because we absolutely have. We've done it together, and our children as well. And so, yeah, I think the reason maybe that we haven't had those arguments along the way is because we've just always been very open and we've communicated all the time.
I know for me, I always compare surrogacy as, because you will get the people who say like, oh, well, I couldn't do that. You know, it's usually women will, when they're speaking to a surrogate, they'll say something like, oh, I don't think I could do that. And so the logical response to that is, well, I don't think I could work for a charity. I don't think I could run a marathon.
Yeah.
But in that sense, I think as a couple, if you did work for a charity or if you did run a marathon together, as with surrogacy, there's just that tremendous sense of achievement mm-hmm. once you've gone through your journey. And I think it is that, isn't it? It's just that kind of shared goal that you're striving towards for your friends, you know, for the intended parents. And I think that kind of, like I said, with Kieran's attitude, the kind of crack on and get on with it, it's that kind of goal that you can envisage at the end that keeps you going through it as a team, as a unit, as a couple, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think one of the big positives to come out of having such a rough pregnancy was with us only being together quite a short time when I got pregnant and then having my son, Mateo, is that Kieran's ended up with so much more bonding time than you ever expected. Mm-hmm. And the two of them are just best friends now. They're inseparable. Him and Mateo are just absolutely...
He's the best, though.
It just, I've never seen anything like it. I suppose that's another... But I mean, they would have been best friends anyway. But just seeing how, you know, when he comes home from work and mummy needs to go and have a lie down because she's taking the cyclosine and she needs a 2-hour nap, them two just get on with it. And he's just bonded so beautifully with him because of that. Mm. And it's just been one of the little positives to come out of it, really, is that those two have spent so much time together that they're just inseparable now.
Like, it's accelerated the relationship that you
had anyway. We always say that we've only been together a year, but it feels like we've been together 5 years.
Mm.
Because it is, there's so much has happened in the first in the first year.
Yeah.
It's been like, it has been crazy. It's been crazy.
Within the first year of our relationship, I will have given birth to somebody else's child.
Yeah.
And that is not something that people can say they've done.
No. It's wild.
So we've spoken about the support. Obviously, there's the emotional and kind of the physical support that Kieran and myself have offered to our partners. And then obviously there's the kind of reassuring support, Max, that you've offered to Kieran. And you've started to elaborate on how your children, and obviously we mention a lot how our children have handled the surrogacy journey and kind of their understanding. We've mentioned that in previous podcasts. But what about the rest of your family, Max, and obviously Kieran as well, you know, with you guys getting together, and you knowing that this was, for want of a better phrase, this was what you were getting yourself into when you guys got together. But how did your friends and family react to your decision to become a surrogate and by extension, a partner of a surrogate?
For me, I mean, my mum's very chill. When I told her I was pregnant with my son, it was a big surprise. And she was very like, oh, okay. Whereas my dad was kind of a bit more shocked. So when I said, you know, this is definitely happening, I'm going to be a surrogate, my mum was like, oh, well, you know, you'll do what you want to do and I can't stop you, 25. My dad was very much not against it, but I think when I was growing up, everyone expected me to be the sort of person that would be married and have five kids by the time I was 30. And when I had my son and said, that's it, I'm done, nobody believed me. And even to this day, I'm convinced that half of my family thinks that I'm lying when I say that I am having no more children. And so when I said I'm going to be a surrogate, I think a lot of my family struggled to comprehend because they were like, well, you're going to want to keep the baby. And I'm like, well, no, if I wanted a baby, I could make one in a much more easy way. I don't need to go through IVF with somebody else's child. And I mean, it's taken a while. I think once my dad met my IPs, it was a lot easier for him to picture, okay, these are parents. These aren't just two people that she talks about. These are two men that want a baby and she's going to have a baby for them. And I think that made it a lot easier for my dad to be able to sort of put the two together. But generally, my family have been really supportive. I think definitely since my dad met my IPs, it's made life a lot easier. I've taken to a couple of socials. He sort of got the feel for what a great community and essentially a big family that SUK is, and that it's not, you know, I'm not being used or exploited. It's a decision I've come to on my own. And essentially, I think as an only child as well, my dad is very protective of me. So when I make big decisions in my life, it's always a bit nerve-wracking for him. But he's come round and all of my family have been really supportive to this point now. I'm really lucky, actually. It's taken time, but we've gotten there, and they've just kind of, once I was pregnant, it was kind of like, oh, right, okay, well, this is happening. Got to accept it now and support her.
And I think it's fantastic as well when the parents of a surrogate are prepared to go to socials and kind of dip their toe into that world and learn a bit more about how it actually works and how a surrogacy journey is about. I think that's great. We had that as well, didn't we, with your mum? She's been to some socials before, hasn't she?
And similar to, I guess, to Max as well, my, you know, my mum and my dad, they were just apprehensive, more kind of, not so much about me necessarily wanting to keep a baby, but about the kind of physical implications that that might have on me. And but yeah, I think my mum, it was this couple that she didn't really know anything about. And then it was Joe's birthday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we went to their house and all her family were there. And I took my mum, and this was before I'd even got pregnant. I remember we got back in the car and my mum said to me, I get it. I get it now. You know, she said, you're not just helping to make parents, you're helping to make grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and this extended family that my mum has. And mainly through luck, we were just lucky that we were able to have our three. So I think definitely my mum was apprehensive, and especially after I'd had my first surrogate baby, she was saying, oh, you're not going to do it again, are you? Lo and behold, it was a little weird. And so I think, but again, I think because she knows that I've got Alex and I've got a strong support system and both sets of intended parents that we have helped are our friends. And so they've been a massive support as well, haven't they?
And what about for you, Kieran? How are your family around, as we mentioned before, what you were, in air quotes, getting yourself into?
Well, I remember first mentioning it. Well, no, I told my mum about that. And then my mum does what mums do now. She Facebooks. And then she was, she's a surrogate. I said, yeah. She said, oh, that's so cool. And then my mum started reading a couple of blogs. And then, yeah, I think my family have been really supportive.
Yeah, wonderful.
I think they've been really good. I think a surprise for a lot of them, especially at the fact that I'm going to be your birthing partner. I think my mum's a bit scared now.
You're just going to pass out.
Yeah. Mum thinks I'm just going to hit the deck as soon as I see something. But they've been really good. And my mum said, like, if Max goes into labour in the middle of the night and it's like you're struggling, just ring me. It'll wake me up. I'll chat to you. And they just ask loads of questions.
Yeah.
I think they've been
amazing.
Really good.
I did text your mum a few days ago and she sort of was asking how I was. And I just said, look, I just wanted to say thanks. I said, it's one thing for your son to bring home a new girlfriend, but for her to be like, oh, I'm going to have someone else's baby inside of me in 8 weeks. I said, it's a bit of a weird situation and you could have been like really off about it. I said, and I just want to say thanks for the support. And she sort of texted back and was like, it is weird, but we've managed and we muddled through. And she was like, and we're all supportive of you and it's been great. So, I mean, I couldn't have asked for more from them, really. Your family are great. I love your family, but we get on really, really well.
Yeah,
it is great that they were all on board. I mean, for me, my mum was very much the same as Renna's mum. It just came from a place of a lack of knowledge, naivety and concern, you know, just like, well, she does know what she's putting her body through again and so on and so forth. And with both sets of parents, we just literally said, well, would your answer have been any different if we told you we were having a fourth? And you just heard this pause and just like, well, no. It's like, well, what? How is this any different then? You know, how is this any different to if we decided we were going to have another child for us rather than for our friends?
That's what I found. A lot of like people in the early stages were referring more to my son, and it was, oh yeah, but it's gonna impact Mateo. And like, I got to a point where I was saying, do you know what? I mean, I'm not a perfect parent by any means, but I breastfed him for 3.5 years. He co-slept in my bed for the first 3 years. I was one of those really attached parents without meaning to be. I didn't have a night away from him until he was three, and like, I've sacrificed a lot for my son, and for quite a long period brought him up essentially single-handedly. And I said, you know what, if I want to be selfish in quotation marks, so to speak, so be it. Like, this is for me. I deserve to do something that I want to do. And do you know what, it's not really impacted him at all.
No, he's been amazing with it,
and what he's gained out of it from the community, from meeting the boys, from just this extended family that we've ended up with, it's more than outweighs any negatives that he could have perceived through this.
He has dealt with it really well.
He's been brilliant.
You certainly sound like the embodiment of a lot of surrogates that we've spoken to over these podcasts, Max, in that you're a very strong-minded lady. You know what you would you know what you wanted to do, and you're very set and clear goal. And you know, Renna's the same, speaking as her husband. You know, she knew she wanted to do this. She knew this was something she wanted to achieve, which brings us nicely into the next set of questions. And we've covered this in previous podcasts, which is around the legal aspects around surrogacy and how that doesn't necessarily support the strong-minded independent women. So for like example, how do you feel about the requirement for a partner to have to give consent for IVF treatment?
I don't think we had to do that, funnily enough, because I think I signed all the paperwork and did everything before
I didn't say anything. Were...
So
unless you forged a signature.
So actually, I think that was something that I did on my own, because we had quite a long GTK, because when we got into it in the March, the boys didn't have any embryos prepared. So we ended up sort of getting everything done and the paperwork all signed quite early on. And then the embryo creation didn't get done until September. And then we had our first transfer in November. So I think everything was kind of out of the way before you came along, really, and you just kind of got thrown in and told, this is where you stand.
This is where you go.
Everything's been signed. Deal with it or don't.
And what about for you, Renna? Because obviously the one thing we haven't mentioned is that you are a director within SUK. So I guess there will have been instances. Has there been instances over the sort of 20 years of the organisation running where a partner has refused to give consent for IVF treatment and has almost bowled his surrogate partner's kind of desires out of the water?
I don't know necessarily situations in the last 20 years, but I do know with conversations that, similar to what Max was saying about her previous relationship, if a partner is saying that they're not going to consent and they don't agree with this, that can make things really, really tricky for then when you're going for IVF transfers. So for example, with us, you needed to consent, you needed to sign paperwork for me to be able to do this. And I don't think it's fair that you have a partner has to consent for you to be able to do this. However, on the flip side of that, I think it'd be very, very hard to do a surrogacy journey if your partner wasn't on board. So I think those are the conversations that need to be had really, really early on before you get to the point of having to do consents for IVF. But no, it's it's the same thing about the whole legal structure of surrogacy and IVF anyway, that, you know, it is very archaic, that a woman needs to have permission for what she's going to do to her own body. But instances within the organisation, not any that I can think of, but there's definitely been surrogates who have joined to say, I'm only doing this now because previously my partner or husband was not on board and now we're not together anymore.
Yeah,
I was going to make that point. Well, the two points I was going to make was one, that I would imagine that would put tremendous strain on a relationship if a partner hadn't consented. But for me, and this was my second point, by the time we got to the stage of embryo transfer, it was just an absolute no-brainer. It's like, well, of course I consent. Of course I'm going to sign this paperwork. Yeah. I don't even see the need to, because if I've come this far in the surrogacy journey, why would I suddenly opt out now? You know, I know what my wife wants to do. And ultimately, as you rightly said, it is her body. If she wants to have an embryo transferred into her body, that's her choice. You know, I shouldn't have to sign anything, but of course I'm going to. For you, Max and Kieran, I know Renna segued us nicely into the next question. How do you both feel about the current legal structure where the partner is considered the legal parent? I mean, obviously, I know this is your first journey, and Kieran, we've discussed that you've got some apprehensions around the labour. But once this is done and the baby is here, how do you feel about partners being considered the legal parent of the surrogate baby?
So when you told me that,
your mind blew.
That genuinely blew my mind, because I didn't know that.
And then when I told you if we were married,
yeah, that blew my mind even more. I don't know why that is even a thing.
One thing I think for me to be considered a legal parent, but for a husband to be considered, and he's had absolutely no involvement. Like, making, carrying.
It genuinely blew my mind. I think I was speechless when you told me. It just wasn't something that I even thought would be done.
So obviously you just mentioned that you guys aren't married, so it won't be relevant to you, Kieran. Max, presumably you'll have already had the discussion with your IPs that one of them can go on the birth certificate from birth. But Kieran, you've now expressed your shock. And I know Renna had this conversation just the other day with a colleague of hers when they were asking about the surrogacy journey and how everything worked. And because we have our parental order, we've got our day in court later this month, the conversation naturally went to, and because Alex is on the birth certificate, and this guy just went, what? And he that was kind of my reaction. I was just like, but I'm not the father. And for us, because Ren has been through the egg donation process, and our first surrogacy journey was or evolved into straight surrogacy, for me, I mean, none of it makes sense to me. And I'm very much looking forward to the legal reforms, and hopefully this will be changed. But for me, I could almost appreciate, well, because it was a straight surrogacy journey on our first surrogacy journey, the Beatrix is 50% of Renna's DNA. That almost makes sense from a legal point of view, that she would be deemed the mother in the eyes of the law. But then our second surrogacy journey, I'm just like, but the baby is, it was an embryo. The baby is genetically nothing to do with Renna and certainly nothing to do with me.
But in the first journey, though, Al, even with our first surrogacy journey, why were you on the birth certificate?
My point exactly.
Anyway?
None of the surrogacy babies have been genetically anything to do with me. So why, just because we have another piece of paper that says that we are man and wife, do I have to go on the birth
certificate? That's what I mean. I think it's wild. Doesn't make sense.
As I said, Kieran, you can appreciate that until the 22nd of August, when this all just goes through in court, I've got four children in the eye of four.
Yeah, because we sort of discussed it the other day and sort of said about the future and what we're going to do about surrogacy. And I said, you know, maybe I'd still like the idea of doing another journey. And I said, you know, maybe put it on the back burner until we're married and, you know, focus on us for a while. And then I sort of was like, oh my God, if the reforms don't change, you'll be going down as its dad on its birth certificate. And we were both like,
Oh no.
how does that, I mean, just kind of, I'm going to get you to look into the future a bit here. If that all happens and the law reform hasn't gone through, How do you think that would make you feel, Kieran, to know that, because you said you haven't got children of your own, but in the eyes of the law, you will legally be a baby father?
I don't think I would even think about the fact that it would be legally my child. It wouldn't affect our decision, definitely just not. And I think it would just be a bit like, well, I'll sign it, but this is ridiculous. and then just forget that I signed it, basically, because it wouldn't be my baby. So I think,
it's like you said before, it's very archaic. Like, it's the whole comes back round to men having authority over a woman's body, really, doesn't it? And what they do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we've summed up. So my next question was going to be what your thoughts were about the proposed legal reform, which might leave the partner with no legal rights to the baby. But you guys have just, and I mean, we've expressed, I mean, you've used the term ridiculous yourself. You know, it doesn't affect us in the slightest to think that, I mean, I don't want four children in the eyes of the law. You know, it just...
Well, it's that legal responsibility.
It's not necessarily about thinking.
Well, for me, it isn't thinking about the fact that currently we have four children, because that isn't the way our brains work. But it's the fact that we have legal responsibility. And that's the bit that I find really, really difficult, that I don't want that legal responsibility of a child that isn't mine. We didn't want it first time around. We were lucky that both our parental orders were within 6 months. But 6 months, we had responsibility for two children that weren't ours, and that legal responsibility was taken away from the parents. That was something really difficult, that I needed to write a letter to both sets of parents that if they wanted to do any medical, you know, vaccinations, whatever needed to be done in those first 6 months, that they needed that consent and that permission for me. If any of the babies needed an operation within the first 6 months, I would have needed to consent to that. And I think that's the bit that I find really
exciting. It's offensive, isn't it?
Very, very offensive. Yeah.
Are there, for you, Max and Kieran, are there any particular moments or experiences during the surrogacy process that stand out to both of you? I mean, again, the weight that you're currently on, Max, I would say maybe discount that, but anything else that that stands out particularly?
I think finding out was a big moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a big moment. Yes.
Oh my God, that's actually worked first time.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Just the whole thing's been just a wild...
Yeah.
Up and down. I think one that really stands out for me is, was it about 7 weeks you had the bleed?
Yeah, about five or six weeks.
Because I remember Max ringing me when I was at work, and you noticed you'd had a bleed at work.
Yeah, I had pains, and then it got worse.
And
bleeding.
And just the emotion on her voice, she was obviously in absolute tears, but there was a real agony behind it, and it just terrified me for Max. That
I just said, I don't want to lose
this. Yeah, she's like crying down the phone, and she just went, I just really don't want to lose their baby. And it was just like, I think that was when it really set in that, like, oh my God, she's doing this massive thing that affects so many people, and in this one moment, it could just all be gone.
Yeah,
and it terrified me, and I think I've met the boys once at this point. Like, it was so early on, in like December or something, wasn't it?
And
I think that just stands out, that it was just such a terrifying moment for Max that it terrified me, and then it would affect all of these people if it hadn't gone the way that luckily it did go, and everything was fine. But
it's that sense of responsibility, isn't it, Max?
Yeah,
massively. And what have I done to make, even though I hadn't done anything, it was just pot luck, rubbish luck, and she was fine. I'd never had that with my son either. So it was just the utter fear of sort of getting the pains through lunch on my lunch break and thinking, take a paracetamol, it's probably just sort of settling in. And then walking back on the playground and thinking, I've just started bleeding. And just like walking back into the classroom in absolute hysterics, going, I need to leave.
But then on the other side, when we went for a scan, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then the relief after the scan, there was a heartbeat and everything was fine. That was just as emotional, but for the opposite reason. And then, it's just been so up and down the whole way through. It's just been...
Finding out the sex.
Yeah, that was a big moment. Yeah, it's just been crazy.
Yeah. Up and down.
Same kind of points for us, isn't it? You know, there's... For me, as Renna's partner, so what I mentioned earlier, that our first surrogacy journey started as a host. We were using their embryos, but sadly, none of them worked. And for me, finding out that they actually transferred two in the second transfer, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Simply because one of them had a bit of an ice shard through as part of the defrost process, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. But to have to make, because Renna was just not in a place emotionally, just to have to call them to say...
Well, we'd known that we were pregnant. You were calling them to tell them that I was having a miscarriage.
Yeah, we've got the video, and I kept the video just because I thought it was important to address the lows as much as the highs.
Yeah.
As you guys said, we've got videos. Our second surrogacy journey, a couple that had waited nearly 10 years to be parents, never seen a heartbeat in their own attempts to have a baby. And we've got the heartbeat video, it's the first time they'd seen a heartbeat on a scan. And there was just that. But on the flip side of that, with our first surrogacy journey, just to have to have told them that we were pregnant, to then have to make that call and just say, I'm really sorry, guys, but it hasn't worked and it's been a miscarriage.
And I just want to clarify, the video that Alex is talking about was when we told them we were pregnant.
Yes, yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that because I don't know whether that makes sense or not. But it was the video that we'd taken when they arrived at the house. It was official test day. We told them it had worked. Yeah. And then 3 days later, so it would be classed as like a very, very early miscarriage. And it was a Sunday, I remember. And this is where it's so important to have that support structure in place. It doesn't necessarily have to be a partner, but that support structure in place. I physically couldn't make that call. I couldn't make that call because it was their last embryo. And we knew that there was going to be a different path, possibly. We'd already talked about the possibility of donor eggs or me being a known egg donor. But it was a phone call that I couldn't make. So Alex had to make that on our behalf, which... He made it, and it was Paul, wasn't it?
I spoke to the intended father. Yeah, so that's a really standout point for us. But as you guys said, to then be able to go on and see the heartbeat, and then with the gender scan in our first surrogacy journey, and then with the second surrogacy journey to see the heartbeat, they didn't want to find out the sex. So, but then their baby to arrive, and for them to see that it was a little boy, and to say, watch them say that to each other, and like, we've got a son after nearly 10 years of trying to conceive. And definitely the standout point.
Absolutely. I think in the viability scans and then the birth, it suddenly dawns on you what you've actually done. Because I think that for us, we do this because we want to and because we can, but I think in those moments where you're watching these people see their child on a screen and then see their child actually at the birth, I think that's when the realization of what you've actually helped to do together. And so all those months of sickness, of all the different pregnancy symptoms you have, the difficult births and all of that, I think it makes it all totally worthwhile. And you can see, actually, this is why I've done this.
We haven't had that moment yet, obviously, with the birth.
No.
Any day. But, I mean, we've spoken about it, and even just speaking about it, we end up getting emotional and crying.
Yeah.
But I think embryo transfer for me, obviously you can come that day because you're working, that was a standout moment for me as well, because I remember lying on the bed and having my hands sort of behind my head, and I had a hand of each of the fathers. And then when we got outside, it was just like a big group hug and everyone had tears in their eyes. I just remember one of the dads going, "Thank you so much for doing this." And that was like a real moment for me, going, "I've just done that. Like, I've actually just had an embryo put in me." But yeah, the birth is going to be a massive moment.
Yes.
I think there's going to be hysterical tears from absolutely everyone in that room. Yeah. But that is something that I'm really excited about.
A number of surrogates have said in the past, if you could bottle that feeling, you know, when the baby is born and you know you've created. Well, I said it to Renner. I just said, look what we did. Mm. You know, we've created a family for our friends. You know, like there's going to be very, very, well, there won't be any, in my opinion, moments in our lives that will top that sense of achievement.
And it doesn't end, you know, that feeling of pride and happiness and friendship. You know, our first surrogate baby's 3, and every time I see her, the surrogacy part of it is a little bit irrelevant now that we see each other because we get on and because we're friends. But when I do see them together, you know, that feeling still stays, that lovely feeling of what you've done. That doesn't go.
So knowing everything that you know thus far, Max and Kieran, what advice would you give to other couples who are considering embarking on a surrogacy journey?
I mean, my main one would just be communication, talking, and attending a conference.
Yeah, conference.
That definitely was a game changer.
I can't stress enough how much conference set my fears at ease a lot. It was an intense day.
Yeah.
There was a lot of emotions, but just go to a conference, do as many seminars as you can, learn as much, do your own research. But in terms of the surrogate and the partner, you need to be on the same page. Yeah. You need to be communicating properly.
Don't hold anything back.
Yeah.
Don't be. I think the worst thing you could possibly do is sit there thinking something, not saying anything, and then wait until someone's pregnant or, you know, giving birth. And they'd be like, oh, actually, I'm a bit worried about this. Oh, great, cheers. Yeah. It's a bit late now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think make sure that you've researched, make sure that you're on the same page. And I loved what you said, Max. I think that communication is key, and making sure that you both go into this that with your eyes wide open. Yes, there are going to be things that are going to happen that you haven't planned for or prepared for, but actually you've really thought about everything. And if there's anything that worries a couple throughout that get to know, just that remembering that you are getting to know a couple. And if there are things along, or a single person, if there are things along the way that either side, the sorrow or the partner, is worried about, just to make sure that they've voiced them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's advice that I definitely give to sorrow partners that I speak to, is that be involved, you know, be as involved as you possibly can be, both from as Kieran rightly said, you know, learning as much as you can and educating yourself as much as you can, but go to socials, you know, as Ren has then just said, you know, if you have concerns, voice them, you know, you're as much a part of the surrogacy team as the surrogate and the IPs are. And you know, they're your extended family. If you have children as well, you're an integral piece in that puzzle, and so therefore you need to be as involved as you possibly can be. You know, be a big part of the GTK, be a big part. I mean, we have WhatsApp groups with our IPs. You know, be vocal on the WhatsApp groups. You know, become their very good friends. You know, because that is what this is all based on, is friendship. And you need to be. You can't be a passenger in that. You need to be a as big a part of it as you can be. I'm just going to go over to the comments. There's only two comments sort of relevant to this podcast that we've seen on Twitter, and I'd probably say like just a few word answer, because we've kind of quashed these over the course of this podcast anyway. But these are two of the comments we've seen on Twitter in the past relevant to surrogates and their partners. The first one being that surrogates are vulnerable people and are coerced by their partners to undertake surrogacy for the money it brings in.
Well, he didn't exist when I became a surrogate, so that quashes that for you.
Yeah.
I was single. And I don't get paid. So.
Yeah, and you don't get paid. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the same thing from me. It was that it was my decision to do this, so Alex definitely didn't coerce me. He needed to educate himself to be happy for us to do this. And as you, Max and Kieran said, there's no money from this.
No profit.
There's no profit from this. It can't be.
It's illegal.
It's altruistic surrogacy, and so it's, you know, it's your expenses, reasonable expenses. So, yeah, and you know, I, and it depends what you look at with the word vulnerable, but and Max and I, I'm speaking on behalf of you here, Max, but we're both strong, independent women who know our own minds, and nobody's going to coerce us into doing something that we don't want to do.
No, if anything, I did the opposite. I left my ex in a bit to become a surrogate.
Yeah. So,
and I was, as I mentioned before, I was 3 months behind in mindset. So there's no way I could have coerced something that wasn't even on my radar from the offset. So that was comment number one. The second one being that surrogate partners are ashamed that their partners are doing surrogacy and hide it from colleagues, friends, or family. Kieran, do you want to weigh in on that one?
Probably the thing I'm most proud of, Max, other than being a mum, it's I drop it in first or second sentence when people ask about her. And I always use the word hero.
Always, yeah.
I always say she's a hero because people, I'll say she's a surrogate and people will say, oh, well, that's a cool thing to do. Or that's an amazing thing. She's a hero. And that's what I always say.
You've written for my blog?
Yeah, and I wrote for your blog.
Yes, you do.
I'm the same, though, as you. I will probably work it into a conversation as much as telling people what Renna does for a job. You know, I'll say she's a teacher, and then somewhere in that list I'll go, oh, and she's a surrogate. You know, why wouldn't I be proud? It's like my wife and I have created two families. We've helped our friends start their family. Why would I be ashamed of that fact? You know, I'm immensely proud of that. You know, immensely proud of my wife for doing that, and to a degree, proud of myself for supporting her in that as well. So, you know, there's no way I would be ashamed. You know, I'm literally the opposite of shame. I've pride for the fact that my wife is a surrogate. That very nicely, very warmly wraps up another podcast on surrogacy. I'd like to thank Max and Kieran for taking part. And obviously, I'd like to thank my wife, Renna, for being a part of it. I don't think I'll be arrogant and thank myself.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you for thanking me. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and we will have some more in the near future. So stay tuned. Thank you.